Hello out there in Cyberland, it's Striketober in America. From the John Deere factory floor to the cereal-crunching halls of Kellogg's, workers are telling management they've had enough. It's labor unrest the U.S. hasn't seen in my lifetime. Thankfully, today I'm joined by Motherboard senior staff writer and expert on all things labor, Lauren Kaori Gurley. Let's roll that beautiful music. I'm Matthew Galt, and this is Cyber.
Uploading the virus.
Eagle One, package being delivered.
All right, Lauren, so you've been on this beat for a long time, and the article that kind of really caught my eye and that I really wanted to talk about first today is this right here that we've got up on the website. Our future is not for sale. America is witnessing the biggest strike wave in a generation. So this article itself is kind of a gateway to everything else that you're writing about right now. It covers just a whole bunch of topics. So can you kind of walk us through the ins and outs of this and like what's going on out there right now?
Sure. So a lot of people are either on strike or about to be on strike. We have 10,000 workers in John Deere. At John Deere, the agricultural giant who walked off the job last week, there are 2,000 nurses in Buffalo on strike, nurses in Massachusetts on strike, a group of Instacart workers who are on strike, 1,000 coal miners in Alabama who've been on strike, I believe, since April. There was a strike that was narrowly averted earlier this week where 60,000 Hollywood workers, TV and film workers were on the brink of going on strike before they reached a tentative contract deal. That would have been the largest Hollywood strike since, I think, World War II. Harvard grad students are just authorized to strike. Columbia grad students just said today that they're thinking about going on strike. There are lots of flight attendants who said today that they voted to go on, they voted to authorize a strike. So basically, I guess maybe it's a little premature to say this is the, I know I said this in the article, that this is like the largest strike wave in a generation or in our lifetimes. But basically, if those 60,000 Hollywood workers end up going on strike, then we'll be at the stage where it will definitely be sort of a historic moment. I think right now we're at numbers that we haven't seen since the 1980s. Basically, there's a period of time between the 90s, the early 2000s, where strike activity, labor activity in the U.S. like really declined, partially because union density in the United States really declined. Unions lost a lot of members. And so we're sort of at this place where we're seeing a lot of labor militancy. Workers are using leverage that they have and they haven't had in a long time due to a tight labor market, not only to go on strike, but also to organize unions. So we're seeing, we can talk about it more later, but we're seeing union drives at companies like Amazon, Starbucks, Dollar General, that have never been unionized before. And then there's also what they've been calling the Great Resignation. So Americans are quitting their jobs in record numbers. I believe last month, 3% of all U.S. workers quit their jobs, which was an all-time high. I think that's 4 million people. Not everyone has the ability to strike. So you have to be in a union to technically legally go on strike. So for a lot of people, their only way to sort of protest working conditions is to quit their jobs and go find, which they can right now, better paying jobs, because a lot of employers are desperate for workers.
Probably help if I unmuted myself. Well, let's zero in on John Deere first, because I think that's a big one. I think, John Deere's been in the news a lot lately. We've certainly been covering it aside from just the strike stuff that's going on.
Sure.
How many people at John Deere are striking? What are they asking for? And, it's created some viral moments. Some things have happened on the factory floors. Can you walk us through some of that?
Yeah, so last week, 10,000 workers went on strike at John Deere. So this is in Illinois, Iowa, and Kansas. 10,000 workers is a lot of people. It's, I believe, the largest strike we've had since 2019, so since before the pandemic. And the strike came about basically because 90% of workers, 90% of John Deere union members voted 90% to reject a deal that the company had negotiated with their union for their working conditions. Basically, what the company and the union wanted to do was to sort of set up or expand a sort of two-tier employment system where new hires got like lesser pay and lesser benefits. So people who got hired after the contract, for example, would no longer receive pensions. So basically, union members were pretty pissed off about this. I mean, this is sort of like selling out your future colleagues down the road, saying that, you know, like, yeah, I can keep my pension benefits, but anyone who comes after me isn't going to have the sort of same working conditions. So I think a lot of people saw that as a terrible thing. You know, this job is no longer a good work middle class job that it used to be. And they were also, you know, there was inadequate wage increases. So workers weren't even getting increases that would, in this new contract, that would keep up with inflation. And so I think a lot of people sort of felt emboldened. I mean, right now you're seeing people at Wendy's and McDonald's being paid over $20 an hour. And so I think, workers in these John Deere factories felt emboldened, like, hey, like, these workers are getting raises, like we're actually like losing money in our contract. So, you know, why not go on strike? You mentioned some viral moments. I think, as we know, John, or I should say that John, these positions are pretty highly skilled jobs. So you can't easily like replace workers. So I think it was on the first day of the strike, they tried to replace, workers were out on the picket line and they tried to replace them and keep production going by bringing in non-union salaried office workers. And an office worker accidentally crashed a tractor into a utility post and like severely damaged an electrical box. And that just goes to show that, you know, jobs are highly skilled. You can't just replace workers, and workers know that, and they know they're in this position where they have a lot of leverage right now to go on strike, and their jobs just can't. They're not replaceable. And so that was a good illustration of that.
Well, and to be clear, it's not like John Deere hasn't been making money hand over fist, right?
Yeah, they've. I mean, this is what you're seeing at a lot of these companies where people are either striking or unionizing. John Deere has profited a ton during the pandemic. So Amazon, so has Dollar General, so has Starbucks, so has Kellogg's. Basically, workers know this as well. I think a lot of times it's harder to negotiate for big raises and wins when you know the company's not doing so well, but they know that's not true. So they're hoping to get more out of by going on strike, they're hoping they get a better deal.
So what's going on at Kellogg's then? Because that's another kind of big one. You know, everyone eats, most people eat cereal. there's this great video or photo, and you kind of track down the person that was in it, right?
Yeah. So somewhat similar situation to John Deere, 1,400, smaller union though, 1,400 Kellogg's factory workers went on strike a few weeks ago. Basically, their problem was that they were also getting asked to sort of do this two-tier employment system where they're selling out their colleagues down the road by agreeing to, you know, sell away their benefits or give away their benefits, basically. They're also agreeing to get rid of cost of living wage increases. So basically, there's no wage increases left in their contract. So basically, this photo went viral of this man. I think you can see it right now. Who was the security guard? He's a worker. He's a forklift operator, but he was supposed to be guarding one of the gates outside the Kellogg's cereal plant in Omaha, Nebraska. That's where they make like Rice Krispies, Corn Flakes, Fruit Loops, and 20 other cereal brands. But this photo of him went viral. It's pretty striking. He's out there in the middle of like a torrential downpour. Everyone else went inside for their car into their cars. But the deal is with this is that when you're on strike, you are technically supposed to keep all of the entrances to a work site guarded at all times by picketers or people who are sort of workers who are watching over, because that means that the company can't then bring in other union workers to fill your spot. So, you know, people aren't supposed to cross picket lines, especially union workers aren't supposed to cross picket lines. So he's out there guarding it, and we tracked him down. I just got in touch with the president of his union. He goes, "Oh yeah, that's Jason Schultz." And I called Jason a few times and he didn't answer. And then eventually a day later, he said, I hadn't slept for more than 30 minutes in like the past week or something. And I've been asleep. Sorry about this. But he basically explained, you know, why he was out there. He said that that photo to him, he doesn't just see himself, but he sees all 1400 workers, which was kind of a moving thing to hear. Yeah.
All right. And this is not just strikes are a big part of this, but it's not just strikes, right? People are, as you mentioned up at the top, people are unionizing all over the place. What kind of activity are we seeing there?
Yeah. Just today, actually, Amazon warehouse workers at New York City's largest Amazon warehouse, which is in Staten Island, announced that they are petitioning. They formed a union and they're petitioning to unionize with the National Labor Relations Board. This is would be if they succeed, they would be the first union at an Amazon warehouse in the United States. This also comes after Amazon defeated a union drive, the first ever union drive at one of its warehouses in April down in Alabama. And so I think this will get a lot of attention. This is also a unique situation because the union is independent. It's not affiliated with any national union. Aside from that, so that's a big deal. There's a lot of organizing going on at Amazon, not just two instances I mentioned. That's sort of unprecedented. I've also been covering union drives at HelloFresh. So Unite Here is unionizing HelloFresh, the like meal kit workers at factories in Colorado and California. There's several thousand workers who are facing some pretty horrible working conditions, pretty unsafe, lots of injuries. We've also been covering union drives in Buffalo, New York at Starbucks. So that there's going to be a union election at Starbucks within the next few weeks, and that would be the Starbucks is in Buffalo, and I expect that would I think that I don't know. I mean, Starbucks is running a pretty intense union busting campaign. As you can see, they recently closed two of the stores that were trying to unionize. But Starbucks workers also would be the first Starbucks workers in the U.S. to unionize, so that would be historic as well. I haven't covered it, but there's a Dollar General that I mentioned, and Dollar General has just boomed during the pandemic. And there's a Dollar General in Connecticut that is voting on whether to unionize tomorrow, and they would be the first in the country to unionize. So there's a lot of union drives going on at places where maybe you haven't seen them before, you haven't seen workers win before, but workers feel emboldened by this moment that we're in. And I think a lot of organizers and people have observed that, like, when people see each other organizing, it sort of has a domino effect. So people inspire each other. That's sort of what's going on now a bit. But yeah.
So why
the main ones?
Why is this happening now? What has changed in America in the past 12 months that unions and strikes have become such a potent force?
Yeah. So I don't think it's accurate to say that workers have more power. I think we're in this situation, like, that workers have sort of been organizing and built all this power that we haven't seen since, you know, the 40s or something. I don't think we're there yet, and I don't think that's what's going on. I think workers realize that, you know, we're in a tight labor market. Basically, the pandemic has made it such that People, first of all, are receiving benefits and they don't have to come back to work. But also people have like worked through the pandemic in horrible conditions. A lot of people have risked their lives in like these jobs that have been deemed essential for like minimum wage, so like $7.25 an hour, which is still the minimum wage in the United States. I think the real reason why this all is happening is because workers have more leverage. They're not stuck in their jobs. They don't have to stay in a shitty job because there's basically more employers who are looking for workers and more positions open than there are workers looking for them. So that workers are in sort of this position where they have the upper hand to say, hey, like, I'm going to demand more. We've seen wages be stagnant for the past few decades in this country. And so I think that also when certain employers you're seeing in like hospitality or in fast food, when certain employers are offering, you know, more than they've ever offered before, $15, $20, $17, $20, $25 an hour, or huge sign-on bonuses, other workers who may not be in industries that are as like in such a tight labor situation are also like, hey, like I could leave and go work somewhere else because they see other places offering more. And so they use that moment or they use that situation to demand more. So on the one hand, that ends up with like workers who are unionized going on strike to demand more. On the other hand, you have workers who aren't unionized unionizing for the first time.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, I want to focus in on working conditions because this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart as someone that worked retail for most of their adult life in various capacities. This one I find really striking. I think this is a good jumping off point. People work 100 days straight. Kellogg's workers shut down cereal factories. Can we talk a little bit more about that? And I am also, again, because it's near and dear to my heart, pretty interested in what it's become, what it's like right now to work in service industry jobs?
Sure. Yeah. So in terms of Kellogg's, which are factory workers, but also just a general trend with what I'm hearing from workers around the country is it's not just about wages or the issues that they're having at work aren't just about wages. During the pandemic, a lot of people, for example, Kellogg's was mass producing cereal like they never had before. And so a lot of their workers were on, overtime shifts where they're working like 4 hours before their shift and 4 hours after their shift ends. So they're working 16 hours a day. People at Kellogg's, but also at Nabisco, which went on strike recently, which makes other snack foods like Oreos and Chips Ahoy, they were also saying that they have, in some cases, worked for months without a day off. So that includes weekends. They also saw that at Frito-Lay, which bakes all the chips. People are really burnt out and tired. And, you know, in some cases, I've spoken to workers who are like, yeah, hundreds of days of work, no day off. Not only that, we're working 16-hour days. This, you know, isn't really a life. And, you know, I mean, people's relationships have suffered. People haven't had any sort of life outside of work for a long time. I think this is also true for Starbucks workers being understaffed, just understaffing in general, and then people's schedules being, you know, so extreme, like they're working so much. Or on the flip side, for example, like in the gig economy, at like Instacart, workers not being able to get enough work. So just sort of precarity in terms of hours or like extreme hours, I think is a huge thing. Obviously stagnant wages, the minimum wage has been the federal minimum wage in the United States has been stuck for a very long time. I can't remember exactly how many years, at $7.25. And then I think another theme is this sort of two-tier system that I've been bringing up, where companies are trying to say, okay, hey, like, we don't want to spend so much money on people anymore, but why don't we just agree together to sort of sell out new hires in the future? So overall, just degradation of working conditions slowly across the country that, you know, people are pushing back against, I think, are the main concerns. Obviously, in factory work and in Amazon warehouse work, I think that safety is a huge issue, like people getting seriously injured on the job, or injured in a way that, you know, affects them for the rest of their lives, or injured in the way that they can no longer work anymore. And then I think on, I mean, we haven't talked about this as much, but I think for white collar workers, there's a lot of organizing going on around more ethical issues. So we're seeing a lot of workers in tech organizing around products that their company make, or their company makes, or, you know, contracts their company has with ICE or other organizations that workers feel aren't ethical.
Let's talk a little bit more about these tiered systems that are coming out. I bring it up again because it was one of the first comments that we got on the Twitch stream here. Hashtag IA solidarity, hashtag vote no to tiered pensions. the way this reads to me, and forgive me if I'm screwing it up, is it sounds like some of the older workers are trying to slam the door behind them and to kind of preserve what they've got. Like, what is with the deal with these tiered pension systems?
Yeah, so I don't think it's workers necessarily who want to do this. I think it's companies are saying, hey, we don't want to, we want you to make some sort of concessions, and often it's easiest to get workers to concede things that aren't going to directly affect them. I think workers feel like very strongly at these places that they don't want, they hate the idea of new hires or their own children working for, you know, lesser wages or without, you know, free healthcare, companies covered healthcare, or, you know, thinking about their children no longer having pensions. But the real impetus behind this is sort of the companies pressuring this and workers feeling like they have to make some sort of concession. I think another way that this happens is sometimes unions, it appears, aren't necessarily in touch with their members. So unions will come up with a deal and say, hey, we're going to get rid of pensions for new people. And union members will say, hell no. And that's what's sort of been happening at Kellogg's, or sorry, at John Deere, with the United Auto Workers, which is their union.
So that kind of speaks to, you know, look at all your lovely labor reporting floating over here. So this speaks to another comment that we just got in the Twitch channel, and I want to bring it up. It's kind of a pushback, but it's also something like I can hear my dad telling me. And I do think that it's important to be able to kind of understand the opposition here and be able to push back against it properly. So this is from Futterman's Rule. Wow, sounds like a resurgence of the validity of unions in the U.S. I say resurgence from my perspective, that unions have gotten away from what they were created for a generation ago. And I like that speaks to something that I think like boomers would say, that unions were created to solve a problem. They solved that problem. We didn't need them anymore. Do we need them again? We obviously need them again, right? Because they're springing back up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would say that there was a period, I think, in the 1980s when union membership first started to decline. And then it got really bad. I think now we're at like 6% of private sector workers are in unions, which is down from somewhere in the 20s or mid, like over a quarter of workers. But yeah, I think, you know, that if unions, what were sort of in this imperfect system that we have, what made it possible for people to, you know, sort of live middle class lifestyles and, you know, be able to retire at 65 and have healthcare that was paid by your employer, where you didn't have to pay anything for your healthcare. That is definitely no longer the case in this country. We are very far from that reality that maybe people in the you know, 50s, 60s, 70s had. And so I think people are using unions to sort of get those benefits and that security back. You know, a lot of people do not receive healthcare. Like if you work at McDonald's or whatever, you probably don't have healthcare unless you get it somewhere else. So that's how people are. That's why I would say unions are coming back.
So I'm from Texas. I still live in the South. Like I said, I worked retail for most of my adult life. Being a journalist is a relatively new development for me. I'm very happy to be here. I'm part of a union now. It's great.
What kind of retail did you work?
I worked a lot of audiovisual, so like Best Buy for a long time. Probably stayed the longest at Banana Republic, of all places, where I worked. Yeah. I was a floor manager, and I was also I worked stock. So like getting up at 4 a.m, unloading trucks, staging the store for everybody. And I did it in Dallas, which is like retail, one of the biggest retail markets in the country. And then before I left, I was at a bookstore chain for a long time. But an aspect of the job, and this was every single job, everything cost more. The insurance got worse, and it cost more. It cost more and covered less every single year. And the raises, the pitiful raises you would get just simply wouldn't cover anything. And on top of that, you were dealing with people at their worst. Like when people are coming in and shopping from you, especially at like a high, quote unquote, high-end retailer like Banana Republic, they feel like they are paying for permission to treat you terribly. And that's, again, something that's just captivated me about a lot of your stories is that you have this great like laser focus on workers and what it's like to be in these jobs. And I wanted to hit this one just because I think it speaks to just how shitty it can be to be in these jobs. In New York City, this is from September, but I want to hit it. Any New York City delivery workers gain the right to use restaurant bathrooms? What? Why? I mean, I know it's hard to find a bathroom in New York City in general, right? But why weren't people being allowed to use the restroom while they're doing their job? And it's weird because this is something that recurs across a lot of jobs, right? Like you hear about it at Amazon, and I know it's something that I certainly dealt with when I was on a retail sales floor. If you're in there too long, the bosses are going to start looking at their watches.
Right. Yeah, we've done a lot of reporting on gig workers and bathroom access. This is one of those stories specifically about New York. This was always a problem, like you're saying, even before the pandemic. You know, Uber and Lyft drivers were peeing in bottles in their cars, or, you know, delivery workers for Grubhub and DoorDash had to pull over and find whatever, someplace to relieve themselves. So during the pandemic, this got extremely bad. Like a lot of restaurants were banning all delivery workers, and delivery workers are independent contractors, which means they're not employees of gig economy company. Like they're not employees of Grubhub, but they're also not employees of the restaurant they're picking up from. And the restaurant they're picking up from is saying, hey, like you can't use our bathroom for, you know, hygiene, COVID reasons. And then we're also sort of on a clock they're being punished by an algorithm that the gig economy company has, so that they're supposed to be working as quickly as possible, taking as many orders as possible. But if they take too long, their ratings go down, and that affects if they're able to get more orders, which then affects whether or not they're able to make money.
I think we lost you. Oh, sorry. There was a burp in the internet, and we lost you for just a second.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. You're good.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So basically during the pandemic, a huge group of New York City delivery e-bike drivers started organizing around this issue and a number of other issues, like their bikes being stolen. But this was a big issue. The group is called Los Deliveristas Unidas, and they are basically a group of sort of Central American, Latino immigrants from, I guess mostly from Latin America, but from all over the world, who organized to get the right to use the bathroom, and they just won it. City Council in New York just voted to say that, you know, bathrooms have to, as much as possible, offer or allow gig workers who come into their restaurants to use their bathrooms. I think a lot of people's reaction to this was, how was this not a right that they already had? This is like such a basic way just to treat anyone, especially someone who is working for you. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. So I think, you know, it just goes to show, a lot of times we forget that, yeah, I mean, working conditions are bad across the country, but some of the people in the most vulnerable positions are those who are independent contractors who work for these gig economy companies who have no benefits or employment rights at all.
So another aspect of this I wanted to hit is another kind of pushback I typically hear from more conservative leaning friends, that the reason that all this is going on right now is because it's too easy to get government assistance. The stimulus money has made it too easy to not work. I know that it's a little bit more complicated than that. And I think if people actually delved in and figured out when money stopped coming to people, they may change their tune. But can you kind of walk me through, does that mean anything? Has that been helping at all?
Yeah, I think that definitely people are, I guess, I'm trying to remember, I saw a study done on this. I think that there's definitely some evidence that workers are not going back to work or staying home because of stimulus checks and unemployment benefits that are sometimes, you know, more than they would have been making at their job. I don't know exactly what's going on right now with unemployment, if it's people are still making, you know, more than they had made while they were working. I guess what I would say back to that is, you know, like, I think billionaires in the US net worth went up by like 62% during the pandemic. So these companies are doing very well, while wages are pretty much stagnant. And people are bargaining away sort of their rights to basic healthcare, to retirement plans, to raises that even keep up with inflation. So yeah, I mean, of course, workers are, you know, going to stay home or choose, especially women, I would have to say, or parents, I would have to say in particular, you know, they have also the job of childcare, which has been a nightmare during the pandemic. So I think, yeah, you can definitely expect that if people have the opportunity to, they might end up staying home, especially if they don't have access to childcare. I guess what I would say is that if you want people to go back to work, you have to pay more, and that's what workers are saying as well. They're showing that by quitting or by staying home, you need to pay more. You need to keep up with inflation. You can't be cutting our benefits. So yeah, I guess I don't blame people for wanting to stay home.
All right. So as we roll out of October and into November, I feel like this isn't going to let up. It's just going to continue. Do we need a better name than Striketober? Do we need some sort of fall or November branding for this thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to continue into November, for sure. I guess when does it end? I guess maybe more when like COVID ends. I mean, I think that a lot of this was created by COVID. So we do need a new name. I don't even know if it's a strike wave. Like I said, like it's definitely just an increase in sort of militant activity by workers in all different forms, from quitting to unionizing. Do you have any ideas?
No, but the chat does. Futterman's rule says Strike Fest 2021, which I actually kind of like. I think that's not bad.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm gonna play us out here. Lauren Kaora Gurley, thank you so much for coming onto the Twitch stream and walking us through all of this. If anyone wants to see more of her stuff, it's up on the screen here. It's all on, and I've dropped the link into the stream chat. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
All right. And we will be back next week, and I think starting tomorrow, actually, with a whole lot of discussions about Dune. It's going to be wall-to-wall Dune on this channel for a little bit. All right. Everyone stay safe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.